Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View. I'm your humble host, PK. Welcome you back at, this is a Monday, June 27th, 2011. Thanks again, bbsradio.com, for your promoting free speech and all the good things you do for alternative radio. I'm excited about the guest I'm having on today. It is, in my gentle patronizing way, it is the great Stephen Lenman from Chicago, my first Jewish guest. And this is important to me because, as you know, I often go off on Zionism and I'm critical of Zionism and Israel. And I'm just glad to have Stephen on. He's a very interesting person. A friend of mine recommended that I request to get Stephen on as a guest. He's quite the author. He's got an interesting bio. He's written some of his books are How Wall Street Fleeces America, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit of that. The Iraq Quagmire. Sorry when I chuckle a little bit about all this war stuff, but it's not that I don't care. It's just that, you know, the inmates are running the asylum. Stephen has written many things critical of Zionism, of Israel, and its oppression to its neighbors and its history of distorting the truth and the facts and all these sort of issues. So we're going to get into that right away from the top because Stephen is with me. He's already with us, I believe. Stephen, are you out there, sir?
Yeah, I sure am, PK.
I'd like to thank you for coming on to Third Stream View and welcome to Third Stream View.
Oh, I'm delighted to be with you. I'm always happy to talk about these big issues. They certainly are big, and they touch everybody's life, and that's what everybody needs to understand. There could be events going on around the world, PK, and people think, well, you know, I'm just worried about earning a living, feeding the family, and so on. But I assure listeners that all those foreign wars and the rest of it, they absolutely affect our well-being, our lives, in so many ways, and we can talk about it during the program.
Well, that's good. Would you care for some tea or coffee before we get started?
Oh, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. I am in good shape. I'm ready to go, and you can throw any issue you want at me, and we can jump right into it.
Well, that was a joke, by the way, because it's self-service. Now, with what you just said about people should know about what's going on around them and the world and this sort of stuff, Stephen, I'm an American. The world revolves around me. Why should I care?
Well, it's our money, PK. We pay our taxes, and my feeling is that I believe in the idea that government should be off by and for the people, that the government in what we call a democracy, that is very much debatable, to put it mildly. But we call ourselves a democracy, and in a democracy, the people choose their government, and the government is supposed to represent all the people. Unfortunately, it doesn't work out that way straight down the line. The citizens, the voters, literally have no power at all to choose their government. The whole idea is a fiction. We go through elections that are, in fact, theater. The main people who reach the power positions including the president and the heads of the major congressional committees, they are all pre-selected. Most people don't understand that, but that's the way our system works. It's no different than in a despotic state, except we, you know, we throw a fig leaf over it and we say, we're a democracy, et cetera, and so on. The same kind of democracy we want to bring to all the countries that we're waging global wars with. Of course, we have no interest at all in bringing them democracy. We don't tolerate democracy, either at home or abroad. And a key point is that every dollar we spend on these overseas wars, these imperial wars, it means there's that much less to spend on domestic needs, and that's why Obama, who is a war hawk as much as any president I know, maybe more than any president I know, waging multiple wars. By my count, he's waging 5 simultaneous wars. Shall I name them? Besides
Please.
The proxy wars, there's a bunch of those going on as well.
Please
but,
do.
But the direct wars that America is waging, Iraq. The Iraq war is very much ongoing. Last August, Obama went through this fiction of a pullout. Oh, there were troops taken out and sent to Afghanistan and other places, but there's over 50,000 combat-ready troops there. The war goes on there every single day. The missions are flying. The troops are there, ready to do whatever they're called on. The bombs go off every day. People are dying every day. You don't hear a single report about it in the U.S. media. And there's a major war going on in Afghanistan. You hear a little bit about that one. We should hear a lot more about it, because years ago it was admitted in the highest places in the U.S. government and the Pentagon that the war is lost. It cannot be won. And let me throw in a little sidebar, PK. It's amazing what comes out after the fact when it's too late to matter. The Vietnam War, well, we know about the Pentagon Papers. They came out, oh, I forget the timeline, I think in the early 1970s, but I honestly forget. But there was something more important, and we didn't know about it till years later. We discovered that Lyndon Johnson's Secretary of Defense, Robert McNamara, he admitted, he wrote a book, and he admitted publicly, I believe, among other places, in an interview either with the New York Times or one of the other major publications. I think it was the New York Times, and he's deceased now, so this was a number of years back. But he admitted that he told Lyndon Johnson in 1965, the Vietnam War is lost, it can't be won, and he used language to the effect that it doesn't matter how much we go on fighting these people, they're going to go on fighting until they beat us and drive us out. And this was known in the mid-1960s, barely after the Gulf of Tonkin, that really accelerated the U.S. war in Vietnam, really Southeast Asia, Cambodia, Laos, the whole thing, killing millions of people over there. And, of course, Nixon continued where Lyndon Johnson left off. It ruined Johnson's life and ended it much shorter than he might have otherwise. We can only wish it would do the same thing to the current warlords, the immediate past one and the current sitting one. Not that it would make any difference, PK, because there would simply be another cog in the wheel replacing the existing cog, and the same atrocities would go on. But I have to wonder, PK, and I honestly believe that there is a Robin McNamara moment that took place, oh, it could have been 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 6 years ago, where top people laid out the facts and explained to the Bush administration, and since Obama came in, repeated it to him, that the war in Afghanistan is lost, we can fight this till kingdom come, and we will not beat these people. I mean, if you think the Vietnamese were tough fighters, Well, you just take a look at what these Afghan fighters are doing. And we give them all kinds of vilifying names, PK. You know, we call them Al-Qaeda. And we call them Taliban. We can call them anything we want. I call them what they are. In the 1980s, the same people, you know, their predecessors, the exact same type people, then they were called the Mujahideen. America recruited them. Osama bin Laden was one of them. He was a CIA asset through the Pakistani ISI, their intelligence services. He didn't know it, but that's what he was. And he remained that until the day he died, which was not in that fiction raid, that stunt that Obama pulled. I don't know who he killed, but it certainly wasn't Osama. Osama died in December 2001. He was a very sick man. He had multiple illnesses. Any one of them could have killed him. And he simply, bad health, ended his life. And that brings up a related topic. You know, we always portrayed him as this evil guy operating out of a cave in Afghanistan. Somehow, from that mysterious cave, whatever it was, wherever it was, he managed to defeat the 16 intelligence agencies of America that we spend, oh, we have no idea how many billions of dollars we spend on them, but I'll throw a number out and call it $200 billion. There was a CIA former high-level person involved with CIA budgeting, who a number of years ago, I don't know how this, it was a woman, I don't know how she ever said this, but she said it could have been maybe 2005 or so, that the CIA budget was $50 billion. Well, George Bush hiked it up tremendously, and it goes up every year. It could be $100 billion today, and that's only one of the 16. So well, Osama, in his cave, PK, defeated all 16 U.S. intelligence agencies. Well, the chance of that happening is about the same as you and I defeating those intelligence agencies. They know every move we make. I assure you that Osama didn't defeat any intelligence agencies. Well, he didn't even try because he had nothing to do with 9/11. That's another story. But here we have two wars, Iraq, Afghanistan. We've got Obama's expanded war into Pakistan. It was minor during the Bush years. Obama accelerated it greatly, especially these hideous drone attacks, that for every so-called militant who really was killed, and again we're talking about a resistance fighter, for every one of those killed, the numbers confirm, more or less, that 50 civilians died. So when you see a headline on CNN or the New York Times or any of the major media, and they say a drone attack kills 20 militants, well, it probably means they killed none. It doesn't mean they killed 40% of a militant. It means they probably killed none, or at most one. And then the next 20, they killed none. They're civilians. But I call them what they are. They're resistance fighters. And those Mujahideen in the 1980s, Ronald Reagan invited representatives to the White House and called them freedom fighters. Well, they were freedom fighters, the same as they're freedom fighters today. It's their country, and they have a right to it, and they have a right to drive out foreign invaders. And that's what America is, not only a foreign invader, an illegal foreign invader in Iraq. We actually occupy Pakistan to some extent. We have our forces there on Pakistan bases. So we're an invader there illegally. Afghanistan, of course, illegally. They each have so-called presidents. They're puppet-installed leaders. There because America wants them there. They'd be out this afternoon if America wanted them out. There's another war going on against Yemen. We're bombing Yemen. And, of course, Libya. I can't forget Libya. That's the war Obama says isn't a war. Well, what in hell is bombing about? You mean you can bomb a country? They're turning parts of the country to rubble. And that's not a war? Well, please, Barack, explain to me what bombing is according to your definition. Do you call it humanitarian intervention? Ah, indeed, that's what he calls it, humanitarian intervention. We're literally, I estimated, based on the best numbers I could find, that on average, every day, we're killing somewhere on the order of 9 Libyan civilians. If you go to Libya and talk to people on the ground, and I had 2 interviews live with people on my program, the Progressive Radio News Hour, seeing things from their perspective on the ground in Tripoli, I tried to get somebody on this past weekend, and we kept calling the hotel. We couldn't get through, and I'm going to try again this weekend. There are 3 people I know who are there. I'm going to try to get 1, maybe 2 of them on my program, but if you follow their accounts from what they're witnessing themselves and the people that they are going out to see and to meet and the information they're getting from Libyans, it's a story exactly the opposite of what the U.S. media are reporting. I mean, these people despise us. They despise America. They despise NATO. I mean, it couldn't be a better recruiting tool for Gaddafi. Not that Gaddafi is a saint. He most certainly is not a saint. But he's not nearly as bad as we make him out to be.
That's true.
If you had to live under a despot, you would want it to be Gaddafi, and that's another story all by itself. Let me take a deep breath, PK. I didn't mean to hog the
discussion. I like hearing from you. I might have to make a few corrections to something you said. Now, you said Ronald Reagan. Stephen, I'd appreciate it if you would say Saint Reagan.
Saint Reagan, indeed.
Okay, I call him Saint Reagan, okay? Also, you said we can call, you were spoke in reference to the Afghanistanis. We can call them Mujahideen. We can call them terrorists. You know what you were saying about this? You were talking about how we can refer to them as terrorists or insurgents or all this, these different terms?
Yeah.
Well, you didn't say we could we can call them victorious.
Victorious resistance.
Yeah,
victorious Mujahideen.
You know, that's the graveyard of empires. Alexander didn't do too well there, of course, the British and the Russians. So those folks can just wait things out and kick butt. And it's their turf. They know the country. They know how to fight their wars. Meanwhile, British and U.S. troops are guarding the poppy fields so that the CIA can get more revenue for things that Congress won't give them the money for. The CIA, of course, being one of the nation's largest drug dealers. And the things you've just mentioned, a lot of these things about how these politicians or bureaucracies, they're already chosen in advance and all this sort of thing. I didn't realize this stuff till about 10 years ago, where the curtain is really drawn back, and I see that this is just staged by the globalists of the day.
Well, that's exactly right, PK. And the drug trade is a major operation. CIA has been involved in it almost since it came into being in 1947, absolutely heavily since the 1980s. They funded the Contra Wars in Latin America, especially against Nicaragua. The war also against El Salvador. The Taliban, when they ran the country in the 1990s, they destroyed most of the poppy fields. They practically rid the country of its poppy growing, and that was a sin, according to us. Because,
but they were paid to do that,
because
weren't
the
they?
Drug trade is so profitable.
Weren't they given U.S. foreign aid to do that? Wasn't that part of the thing that got them to do that, to crush the opium?
We gave them foreign aid to increase the drug trade?
No, I thought we supposedly gave them foreign aid to eradicate the opium trade. But
No. That was a sin. That was one of their sins.
Right.
Because the drug trade is extremely important for the CIA, for the major banks in America. The major banks launder the drug money, and I heard a program, a marvelous program that I know was on Russia Today, where I pick it up, Max Kaiser, the Kaiser Report, And he used to be a broker on Wall Street, and he on one program he spoke about every Friday, his office wherever he worked apparently was close to Citigroup, Citibank. He said every Friday, the limousines drove up, and people got out of them with suitcases, and it was a dirty secret. Inside those suitcases was stuffed with cash. Drug money, drug cash. And
wow.
Every Friday, they made their drop-off at Citibank and of course, all the other banks as well. He wasn't sitting in front of all of them. But this was one of the dirty secrets, that suitcases full of money would be delivered to the banks. I don't know why it was just on Friday. Maybe they delivered it other days as well. But they drive up in limousines and deposit their money, and everybody knew it. And if a broker in one Wall Street firm knew it, you can bet you the U.S. government knew it, and the CIA and the FBI and all of them. But it's part of the dirty game. Laundering this money.
What decade are you referring to, Stephen, for this?
Well, he was there
when the limousines rolled in.
Into the early 1990s. I'm not certain when he left. And he's doing other work now, including his media work. But while he was on Wall Street, this was an every Friday operation. Well, you can bet that this has been going on ever since, especially post 9/11 when they planted the poppy fields again. And I can remember in one of my articles writing that Afghanistan produces enough poppy to supply more than 100% of the world demand for heroin.
Easily.
And this comes out of a UN report. I quoted a UN report in writing about that. That was a while back. But, I mean, this stuff is still going on. And one of the great writers on this, and he included a lot of discussion in a couple of his books on it, Peter Dale Scott. Peter is really an expert on this topic.
I know that name.
Oh, he's marvelous. He is absolutely marvelous. Any book he writes is worth reading. He occasionally writes articles. He's getting well up in years. He's over 80 years old now. He'll be on my program early in July. We'll talk about some of this. But he's written about how drug trafficking is a major U.S. enterprise. It may be illegal for you or me, PK, but it certainly isn't illegal for the big boys doing it, who are allied with the big financial interests and with the CIA and with the U.S. government. And it doesn't matter whether it's a Republican or a Democrat government. The same dirty business goes on all the time. The same dirty wars, the same dirty everything, screwing the great majority of the people in this country. That's why we need to be concerned. All these policies touch our lives, and they harm us. And I started to say before, PK, that every dollar spent on militarism and imperial wars and all banker bailouts and all the rest of it means one less dollar for vital homeland needs. And let me throw the punchline in, and this will be in my book. My book will be coming out in September. It's titled How Wall Street Fleeces America, subtitle, Privatized Banking, Government Collusion, and Class War. And there's one chapter in it, I forget the whole name. It's on the chopping block, Medicare, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And I've also got pensions in there. You could call it the bottom line dirty scheme is, besides destroying all the other social benefits and throwing people out of work and the rest of it, and enacting police state laws, and we've got a slew of them on the books in the last 10 years alone, the dirty scheme is to end Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and publicly financed pensions, maybe heading toward getting rid of all of them, by stealing them in some way or other, you know, letting Wall Street get their hands on them, saying you can only do this, you can't do that, even with your own money. And if they want to do these things, you know, they're going to go ahead and do it, no matter how badly it affects us. But there's no question that this is a plan, and I had a line where I said they'll do it by 1,000 cuts. You know, there'll be step one and step two and step three. Already there have been hundreds of billions of dollars lopped off of Medicare, and I've been a recipient for 10 years, so I feel this. I feel it because they keep raising my premiums. And the contract I signed in 1965 when this thing went into effect, I think it was 1965, the contract I signed was I would pay insurance premiums, including for Social Security. That's what these programs are. They're insurance programs. I would pay my premiums all my working life as a payroll tax. And when I retired at age 65, you could do it earlier, but at age 65 for me, I would get my Social Security benefits, and I would get my Medicare benefits. There was nothing in that contract that, oh, by the way, you're going to have to pay this much, and oh, by the way, we're going to start raising it on you, and oh, by the way, it's the 1 year that stood out in my mind was with official inflation at about 3%, the real number is a lot higher than that, but the official number about 3%, I think the most recent number was 3.6. 1 year, they increased my Part B premium by 17%. 17%. Well, where do they get off doing that? I wish I had the original contract. I mean, I wish it really were a contract I could take into a court of law and enforce, you know, class action suit against the U.S. government. Ha! You know, go fight City Hall.
Let me address some of this, because this is an interesting economics topic, which we should have at a later date. But I'll just keep this very short for now. And that is, the government is the worst manager of anything. Look at the schools, look at the post office, look at Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security. And in a libertarian type of world, we still definitely want to take care of people, but we want to take it out of government control to do this. And that's what they do. They lure people in, so you're dependent on the state. We would rather have people more dependent on themselves and a whole array of private choices, not controlled by government. And I'm tired of the perversion of capitalism and the free market, because true laissez-faire capitalism would never allow crony capitalism, corporate welfare, bailouts, political privilege, corporate socialism, and state capitalism. That is the perversion of the free market system. I'm ashamed of that whole thing. That's where I'm coming from. And of course, this huge war machine, this is not capitalism. This is statism. This is mercantilism. This is, state capitalism. All these contractors in Iraq and Afghanistan, they're gouging at the tax trough. They did not earn their revenue in a free market. So, you know, it coincides with this whole war machine. And so I agree with you on a lot of this. I seek a better way to deliver help and benefits to people, because we see what's going on. It's a mess.
Boy, is it a mess, and it's all against the law. And everything
yes.
you said, I agree with, PK. It really is outrageous. And just for your listeners, a little background on me. I finished the Wharton School and got an MBA in 1960, and it's a place I refer to now as the heart of capitalist darkness. I went there to learn how to be a decent business guy in whatever avenue I would choose to follow. And they didn't teach me about predatory capitalism, but that's what it really is. Even back then, although then it was a shadow of what it is now. You know, it's 50 years later. I just
right.
had my 50th reunion class last June, so now it's the 51st. But they didn't teach me that. But that's what it is, and that's the way the system operates. There's nothing free about the free market. There's nothing free at all about it. A free market would be lovely if everybody played on a level playing field, but it doesn't work that way. The system is worked against the little guys.
It's rigged.
They get absolutely trampled by the big guys, and that's the way the system was set up, and that's the way the government supports it, including with all of the corporate handouts and bailouts and the rest of it. And I was part of a small family business for most of my working life. We never got 10 cents in government handouts. We never
Neither
even asked
did my
for
family
it.
Business.
Yeah, well, they probably would have laughed at us if we if we asked for a bailout. We needed a bailout a few times. We nearly went under. Small business, and our business was cyclical, and you get a mini tsunami coming at you, and it can take you right down and end you real easily. So small businesses go under all the time. I would say it was almost a minor miracle that we managed to survive standing on our feet. And
yeah.
then we got up around retirement age, and we sold out and we retired. Three years before the 2000 debacle hit, the dot-com bust and the rest of it, and that was the beginning of a dark decade economically, despite the temporary recovery after 2003. You know, the war and the Fed-led recovery.
All right.
This phony recovery. I mean, real recovery means government invests in its industrial economy. Instead, the way this country has been run, the industrial base has been shipped abroad. No country can prosper when its industrial base is located in other countries. And it's not just its industrial base. It's so many high-paying professional jobs. Anything that can be done cheaper overseas is sent there. Maybe, I discovered, I was amazed. I thought, yeah, I understand that. But probably the things that will not go overseas are the defense-related secretive things that we don't want to share with other countries or risk-sharing. But I discovered that even a lot of that goes overseas. And you've got people operating with secretive defense information in other countries, China, Bangladesh, who knows where. And, I mean, this stuff can be found out by the governments. And you would think that we would not want this stuff spread around loosely. I mean, why not just publish it online so you and I can read it, PK?
Well, you make so much sense. You and I are so much on the same page, and I bet we would even come together on economic solutions if we could more clearly define this stuff. Because what we have now, the hypocrisy of it all, is the politically connected big business, they want socialism for themselves and capitalism for everybody else. Let everybody else compete and struggle, but we want the gravy train from the government. We want the subsidies. We want the government contracts. We want protection. And that is, I'm totally abhorred by that. You know, it'd be like, I'm also a musician. It would be like musicians, you know, I don't know if you're an instrument musician at all or ever were, but you know, you always want to strive to play in tune and in time. That is the goal. That is where the integrity of the music lies, playing in tune and in time. Well, now, if you look at music, compare it to business. We're going to always, in the court, the big business or the politically connected. Now, we're always going to play out of tune, and we're not going to play in tempo, because that doesn't matter anymore as long as we're taken care of by the corporate fascist state. I want a separation of industry and government, like there should be a separation of government and religion. How dare they want American taxpayers to bail out the big boys? You know, and it's just sickening. It's a libertarian nightmare. For those of us who have integrity and appreciate a true free market, we would never give them our money or our rights to do this sort of thing. So, yes, the government, like, no matter who's in, this is what they're doing. And that's why they hate Ron Paul, because he would put an end to this kind of stuff. He wants to end the wars. They hate him for his anti-war stance. Now, I would assume that you and I, Stephen, we both believe in having a defense for America, but not a global empire, not intervening in other countries' business, not having over 800 military bases throughout the world in over 140 countries. And when I get into debates with neoconservatives and other conservatives, their back is always against the wall when I say to them, those who purport to support the Constitution, okay, please show me where it's enumerated in the U.S. Constitution that the politicians and the military is sworn to uphold and defend. Please show me where it states that the federal government is supposed to have over 800 military bases in over 140 countries. And they don't have an answer because their back is against the wall.
Well, PK, I agree right down the line with every single thing you just said. every single thing. I mean, you may be a libertarian, and I may be to the left side of the spectrum, but we certainly agree 100% on that. It's interesting, PK. Oh, it was a few weeks ago. I was interviewed on a program with two other guests, and we were talking about Middle East issues, including Libya and Israel-Palestine. And I didn't know who the guy was. He was introduced as a former U.S. Senate candidate, a losing candidate, I guess, who sounded like he was a libertarian from Texas, and I forget his name. The name didn't mean anything to me. And this was on television, except I couldn't see him, and he couldn't see me. But it was astonishing. We went 30 minutes, and everything I said he agreed with, and everything he said I agreed with. And at the end of the program, I scratched my head, and I said, my goodness, a right-winger, and, well, I don't like to think of myself in terms of wings, but if forced to, certainly left of center. And, we absolutely agreed down the line.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think what it comes down to is, we can call ourselves rhetorically anything we want as a nation, but the facts belie that mythology that we put out. You hit it right on the nail. You hit the nail on the head when you said we have socialism for the rich and free market capitalism for everybody else.
True.
You know, the bankers get in trouble. Well, you know, just print have the Federal Reserve that they own. The Fed, of course, they own the Fed. If they need $1 billion, if they need $10 billion, if they need $1 trillion, they just print it up, ready money. Here you are. You want a couple of extra zeros on the end of it? You got it. And the General Motors is another great example.
Oh boy!
Well, they're in the finance business also with their GMAC financing cars. But
true.
You know, just take the whole corporation. I mean, they were bankrupt. Or were they?
You know,
in comes Uncle Sam and props them up, and General Motors is continues to operate. Well, you and I ask the same question. Why in hell should they get our money? Why don't at least we keep our money? Why do our tax dollars have to go to prop them up? I mean, plus all the rest of the way our tax dollars are misused. PK,
you're right.
You know, marauding the world, killing people, so rich people can get richer, and at the same time, they're making us poorer because those tax dollars aren't doing a thing for us. So our needs go begging, so we can plunder the world, and we can make big corporations bigger and richer, and that's the real American way. You oppose it, and so do I.
Stephen, this is all your fault because Obama's from your state and your city.
He's from my city, indeed. He sure is.
Stephen, I forgot to mention in my little rant about reforming the free market capitalism is that, and here is a capitalist criticism, is that the massive military-industrial-congressional complex, I always add congressional, the military-industrial-congressional complex is sucking valuable investment capital away from the market, which needs this investment for market-produced consumer goods and services. So it, you know, it's another anathema. But now I want to steer more into the Middle East, as we are prone to do here, to get more your take on things. I forgot to mention that it would seem like the U.S. in the case of Libya, the U.S. and NATO, we've become the Barbary pirates.
Boy, are we ever! Are we ever! That's it. I mean, the Barbary pirates were pickpockets compared to what we are. I mean, we need a new definition for world class predators to define this country. You know, we always couch our wars in terms of democracy and humanitarian missions and so on. And there's no question. I mean, anybody with any sense understands that those are the last things this country would ever tolerate. Just look what we did to Iraq. Iraq no longer exists. The cradle of civilization. We leveled it, and then we divided it in three pieces. Iraq no longer exists. That's the plan for Afghanistan. It's practically that way now, except the war continues to rage, and the Afghans can put their country back together again. someday, who knows when. The same plan is for Pakistan. The same plan is for Libya. Humanitarian intervention, we're killing Libyans. We're not liberating them. Most Libyans know it. These so-called rebels, they're not rebels. They're cutthroat mercenaries. But exactly. My understanding is that even a lot of them are getting disillusioned with what's going on because, you know, they're being used as imperial tools, and maybe some of them are seeing through the subterfuge that they're being used, they're being abused. There'll be nothing done for them. You know, they'll be thrown out like yesterday's garbage if the country ever gets subdued. But the idea is the same for Libya as it was for Iraq and as it is for Afghanistan. It's to conquer the country, occupy it directly or indirectly, colonize it, balkanize it, control its mineral wealth, steal its other material wealth, exploit its people, literally destroy Libya as it exists today, and turn Gaddafi into a saint, literally, compared to what's coming if America gets what it wants. And its co-conspirators, NATO allies. And by the way, NATO is a code word for the Pentagon. America runs the Pentagon. It always has, it does now, and it's no accident that a U.S. admiral is the supreme commander of NATO. And yeah. His number two in this Libya war is the AFRICOM commander, the U.S. command for Africa. A man by the name of Carter Ham. Forget the name of the admiral in the Pentagon. It's a little harder to remember.
Is it Ham Mullen?
Is easy to remember. Anybody can look up the Pentagon and find his name. But he's an admiral, and he's running the show. And the idea that NATO was running it and America is a subordinate to the NATO operation, America is never a subordinate in any war it's involved in. When it gets involved, it runs it. And it decides, and it makes the decisions, and the others are pressured or whatever to go along. And, you know, the deal is they get a piece of the pie. America gets the biggest piece. But,
right.
You know, Britain would get their piece, and France their piece, and Italy their piece, and so on. And others, I don't know what the devil Denmark is going to get out of this, or Qatar, or whatever. But, you know, I mean, they go along with this imperial game. And the people in these countries always are the losers. I have no doubt that the great majority of Libyans detest us.
Sure.
Us. I heard a report, I cannot verify it, but I heard a report that Gaddafi is or has armed most Libyans that he has any influence or control over, which is at least a few million people, including women, and they willingly want to fight in case NATO invaders come to Libya. They nearly want to fight. They really want to fight them on the ground. So, you know, NATO may do what it wants to do. I thought an invasion's coming. I thought it would have happened by now. Oh, long before now. I thought it would have happened well over a month ago. I wrote about it. Didn't happen yet. Although it is known that the West and their allies, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, maybe other regional states, are arming these rebels. France has shipped in weapons. I believe the UK has shipped them in, which means I think America has shipped them in, the Saudis. So we're arming these people and recruiting them. And these are mercenaries. You know,
right.
I don't know what else we're paying them. They're probably getting more promises than payments. And they're fighting, and they think they're fighting for something better. They don't realize that whatever they don't like now, they will yearn for it if they ever let America prevail. But again, my understanding is that I think growing numbers are getting disillusioned for whatever their individual reasons are. And I haven't heard this, but if that's true, I would imagine that Washington and NATO are a little bit worried about what's going on. They may end up killing Gaddafi, but I don't know what they're going to end up with. You know, I even volunteered to go on Libyan TV, by the way.
Wow.
The only way I could do it would be by Skype video, but I'm in contact with somebody in Libya who said he's going to try to get me on. I said, if you can get me on Libyan TV, I will go on and I will denounce this imperial operation. And I will state it as boldly as I'm doing it with you, PK, as I do on my own program, in other interviews, and I will say exactly the same thing to a Libyan audience proudly.
You know, I saw a clip on YouTube last week. You know, I'm not a fan of Gaddafi's by any means, but he's done actually quite a lot for that country when it showed, I mean, the public works. Now he's put this oil revenue in the country and a lot of this stuff. So he's definitely been portrayed as the devil, but you're right. Things are much better under him than what lies in store. Let me just talk about Iraq for a minute. Iraq, as you know, stands for Idiotic Republican Authorized Quagmire, or Israeli required authorized quagmire. I believe that the Iraq war was largely a proxy war for Israel, and who gained from it, and the military industrial complex. Israel didn't care for the fact that Saddam had the largest Arab army in the Middle East. Now, what did Bush do to Iraq? He destroyed the small Christian community there. He destroyed the small Jewish community there. He caused the plight of millions of refugees. And Daddy Bush and this Bush, they had bombed, they'd used their military to destroy the infrastructure, power plants, water filtration plants. So this is their legacy. And I'm ashamed of what they did. And so... You know, and now Afghanistan, that is a mess. I understand that the Taliban visited Bush before 9/11 out in Texas because the oil interests or whoever, the Bush crowd, they wanted to run a big pipeline through Afghanistan. Well, their negotiations did not prove to be fruitful. And, you know, not too long after we had 9/11. So there's such collusion and such a mess. And then, of course, for me, the real axis of evil, in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, is the U.S., Britain, and Israel. You have the CIA, Britain's MI6, and, of course, Mossad, all working together as the masters of deception. And they carry on doing what they want to do. And we haven't touched on Israel. I want to go there now. This whole mess in Palestine, and I looked at your, I was looking at some of your, on your blogs and your quotes from the former Zionist leaders in the past, the very terrible Jewish supremacist quotes, their genocidal quotes from these people. Most people have no clue that this is going on, and coming from you is even deeper because you have a Jewish background. You're an anti-Zionist Jew, which I appreciate. I stand with the anti-Zionist Jews, and of course, the word anti-Semite is always thrown out as a way to try to hush dissent, but or of course, in self-haters. But I really applaud what you're doing. You got some huge gojones to write like you do and to say the things that you do, because you have the truth. You and I, we have the truth on our side. And if our friends and our families don't get it, I'm sorry, but someone's got to do it, and we're going to keep doing it, aren't we, Stephen?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, PK. I very much am Jewish. I'm not a religious Jew. I never was. But
right.
I had Jewish upbringing. I was bar mitzvahed. I went to Hebrew school, the whole schmear. This was back in the 1940s. I was 14 years old when Israel became a state. So it was all new stuff. I didn't know anything about it. And I never once remember Israel being discussed in my household. And then I grew up, and et cetera, and so on. So, I mean, Israel was a brand-new country. We had no idea then the horrors that they committed to create their own state. But I feel an extra obligation, especially being Jewish, the idea of being self-hating. What a despicable red herring that is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Israel, I call Israel what it is. I mean, I refuse to pull punches. And again, I feel an extra obligation because I'm Jewish. Israel is a rogue terror state. There's no question about it. Zionism is a corruption. It's a cancer. It's destroying Israel. It's not building Israel. It's destroying Israel. It didn't have to be that way.
No.
What Zionism is at its roots is the ideology of wanting Jews to have a state of their own, Well, I don't really go along with that. I can understand a nationality wanting a state to have its own country. You know, the Irish and the French and the Italians
sure.
and the Mexicans. But, you know, in these countries, you don't just have people of one religion. Or you could have a predominant religion. Mexico, it's mainly Catholic.
Right.
But, you know, there are non-Catholics there. As awful a country as Mexico is, the kind of government they have, I never heard anything that, you know, people who aren't Catholic are persecuted because they're not Catholic. I never heard that come up. So I'm assuming I could be a Jew living in Mexico, and nobody would bother me. Nobody would say, you're a Jew, we don't want you.
Well, but, Israel is the most dangerous country in the world for Jews to live in. And recently I'm seeing that from my research, including things I've seen on video on YouTube, is that a lot of Jews in Israel or a lot of Israelis are wanting dual passports, or there's becoming a slight exodus from the country because they see the writing on the wall. They don't like what's going on.
That's exactly right. There are more leaving than coming in. And I have to wonder, who are the ones leaving? It could be some of the best and brightest are sick and fed up with this stuff.
Let's hope so.
I wrote an article this morning, very fast. I wrote an article a couple of days ago on breaching Gaza siege because there's a brand new flotilla that I haven't seen an update whether they've set sail yet, but they were supposed to set sail any time now.
Right.
And Israel and Washington and related, there's a law group in Israel. I never heard of it, but it's in a second article that I wrote this morning. I just wrote it this morning because I'm getting daily updates. So I included brand new information, and I called it a Breaching Gaza Siege Update. Almost never do I write an article and get it out the same day. But this one I was able to write, in a couple of hours, and I got it right out because it had fresh information in it. But Israel is trying to block this flotilla. It's called Freedom Flotilla 2, 10
right.
ships. Including a U.S. boat called the Audacity of Hope. There are distinguished people on it. Kathy Kelly, the great activist. She lives in Chicago, by the way. Ray McGovern is on it. Medea Benjamin from Code Pink. Hetty, I forget her last name. This Holocaust survivor who's in her 80s. She's on one of the, I think she's on the U.S. boat. But they're trying to block the boat from leaving Athens. And they're getting the Greek government to go along with this, saying the ship is not seaworthy. Well, the ship is seaworthy. It was checked out. It was given an official seal. Yes, everything is fine. You're ready to go. And you've got this law firm. I guess they're in Israel. They certainly represent Israel. And they managed to intimidate a French insurance company, they were going to sue them, not to provide insurance for a French boat leaving from Marseille. They've done the same thing in Canada. I didn't include that in my article. I included the French one. But
right.
they filed a lawsuit in U.S. federal court against the flotilla. I mean, all these dirty, underhanded tactics. The U.S. State Department is doing everything but making it illegal for the U.S. boat to go. I mean, this is the kind of lawlessness that goes on. And where are they going? Of course, they're going to Gaza. Gaza is illegally held under siege. It's all illegal. I call it slow-motion genocide. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's been going on for 4 years now. But Gaza was always the world's biggest open-air prison for many, many years preceding that. But it just got worse in June 2007, 4 years old now. And ships, boats, whatever, people, including by land, trying to bring vital humanitarian aid, and it's needed. More is getting in now because of efforts like this. The whole world knows what Israel is doing.
Yeah.
Israel's reputation is mud, and it's getting blacker and blacker all the time, just like America's reputation. And I refer to America in its relationship with Israel. Israel, this tiny country, you know, 6.5 million, 7 million people, whatever, one-fifth of them are non-Jews, the persecuted Muslims that are treated as bad, they're treated worse than blacks were during the worst of the Jim Crow years.
True.
You know, I mean,
true,
that,
very
it was
true.
Pretty bad then.
Stephen.
But it is really awful. Israel is worse than our Jim Crow, worse than South Africa's apartheid. It is nightmarish for Palestinian Muslims, and it's not a piece of cake for Christians either. But the Muslims are the ones who are especially targeted. And then you get the Gaza situation, and there are growing numbers of people around the world who want to help. And they're willing to risk their own safety to come on these boats to bring aid. More is getting in because of efforts like this. So Israel is letting more in to try to show that the siege is being eased, but it's right. So modest it doesn't amount to that much. And even articles in some good publications I've read who say, you know, this is really more symbolic because Israel has eased up on the siege. Baloney, they've eased up. Sure, they've eased up a little bit. It's like somebody choking you to death, but they're doing it more slowly.
Steve, let me ask you, have you, maybe in even your recent past, have you had some highly spirited, aggressive debates with very pro-Zionist Jews or other Jews? Have you come across, have you engaged in these sort of debates?
Only once by accident, never on purpose. I was on a Press TV program, which is a wonderful television service out of Tehran. They get me on a fair amount of times. And they invited me on. There were two other guests. I didn't know who the other guests were until I got on air. And I discovered them. One was a professor at a New York City school, I forget which one. But he was the kind of guy who shows up on Fox News. And we didn't really have a debate, PK. You know, he would have his say, and I would be polite and let him say it. And then they would ask me to comment and so on. And I would begin talking and saying some truthful things, and he would immediately cut me off.
Right.
So he not only had his own say, he dominated most of my time. That's the way they shut you out. They don't want the truth out, even on Iranian television, let alone America's television. And, I mean, I was really furious, but he didn't know it. And
yeah.
That's the way it went. I got in some comments, but I probably got at most a third of the time that I should have had, and he dominated the rest of it very, very rudely. The other guest was also a wonderful guest. A guy's a doctor, and he was just a bully. He was put on this program to bully us, but I don't think Press TV realized how bad he would be.
Stephen, excuse me, I don't want to bully you, but our time has kind of run out here. And I want you to know, Stephen, that I want to remain friends with you and in touch with you because I've become a big fan of yours. I like the way you speak and handle yourself, and your knowledge of the subject matter is great. But you got a great sense of humor, too, which, you know, helps the whole you know, topics go by. And I so enjoyed talking to you. And thank you for so much for coming on to Third Stream View. I learned a lot. And I'm glad that you and I are on the same page on so many things. So I'm going to keep in touch with you, my friend, because I want to bring you back on soon.
PK, I'll be delighted to come back anytime you want. These are big issues. People need to know about it. And I've discovered that people are starving for real information. You know, I'm just one guy. There are lots of others doing what I'm doing.
Right.
But this is where you can get real information listening to programs like yours, PK.
Thank you, and thanks so much for the Internet and Alternative Radio. So I've got to say goodbye now. I'd like to thank everybody again for tuning in to Third Stream View, which today is pre-recorded due to scheduling. So every Monday evening at 9 o'clock Pacific, 11 o'clock Eastern, and 11 o'clock Central, 12 a.m. Eastern. Until next week, this is your humble host, PK, signing off.